All right. Good night, every good night.
Good
Good
night.
evening.
Goodbye. Take care.
Evening, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Talk Openly. My name is Jack, and I'm here with my lovely Sangha friend Daniel. Hey, Daniel.
Howdy, Jack. Nice to see you. Hello, everybody
Good
out there
to
in
see
Talk
you.
Openly land.
Yeah, welcome everybody. Yeah, tonight we're going to be talking a little bit about our own experiences with entering the Buddhist path and taking refuge because there's a refuge ceremony coming up on Sunday at Lion's Roar Dharma Center. So we wanted to share a little bit of our own experiences and yeah, offer what we've a little bit of what we've kind of discovered on that journey. And I think it's somewhat of an ongoing journey, don't you think, Daniel?
Oh,
Taking refuge.
there's no thinking about it. There's no doubt about it that it's a journey that I think is going to continue to unfold for a very long time.
Yeah, for sure. So we're gonna do that in a little bit, but yeah, I want to check in with you. What's your training like? What you been up to?
My training's good. My training's really good. I continue to put into practice some of what we learned at our retreat not too long ago, and that's been really quite wonderful to see it all see that unfold. Most notably, it's been really cool a lot of times for my shamatha, not always, but quite frequently I'll do the Tara mantra on the out breath, right, as Lama had taught us. And I find it's exceptional. There, I, it's given new meaning to the calm abiding aspect of shamatha. Yeah,
So a
there
lot of
really,
calm.
yeah, there's a lot of, well, it's the calming that comes with that sort of intentional release. It's just focusing on the breath alone, whether it's on in or out or both. That certainly has been helpful over the years. In this case, by combining it with a mantra, it really helps me to stay focused, right? And to stay concentrated and to not veer off too much. And what I notice is this deepening through the entire sit, right? It gets, like it starts, I'm kind of like, I can feel sort of the tenseness. I can feel the energy, sort of heightened energy or the dullness, right? Either one, but I can feel it and I can see that sort of just stabilize and kind of get like modulated over the course of the practice. So that's been really quite wonderful. And in terms of other stuff going on, I was curious, did I mention last week the thing about dogs being dumped?
You did. Yes, you
Okay, I thought so. I thought I did.
did.
Okay,
Yeah,
so
tell us an up.
that was a bit of a fiasco. But it's all whatever. Those dog everything's taken care of there. So then tonight I'm
Yeah.
on my way over back to the house to do the show, and my daughter and I come across, we almost run over a turtle. Uh-oh, am I losing you? It seems like maybe the internet connection's not very good.
Are you serious?
Yeah, there we go. There we
I
go.
can
We're
hear you.
okay, good.
Yeah, and I heard about the turtle.
Yeah, so I almost run over this turtle. So I pull over, I run out, grab the turtle, and I'm like, oh no, not again. Somebody put a pet turtle on the side of the road. But it turns out, no, a little bit further down the road, there was a turtle that didn't make it. And I got out to look at it. I thought, this is the strangest thing. What's going on with turtles on this busy road? And I could see actually that that turtle had had eggs. And then I was like, ah, it's turtle mating season, I guess, and that's what they were up to. They were moving across this busy road. Anyway, long story short, it's an invasive species in California. I did take it back to where I thought it came from. Normally, that's not the thing to do with a turtle that's crossing the road. Normally, you just help them across the road, right? But there was nothing on the other side of the road and it wasn't going to make it. There was no chance it was going to make it across this road. So
Yeah.
I just took it back down to this little pond where I know it came from. And even though it's an invasive species, I figured, eh, it's all right. It was already there. I didn't introduce it. So
Yeah.
it added a bit of excitement to the evening.
That is so interesting. I wonder what's going on with you and animals.
I don't know, but since last week, okay, get this, not just the turtles, but I came across two more like runaway dogs, right?
Oh my God.
Yeah, I have no idea what's going on there, but I couldn't actually help them. They ended up continuing to run, both of them, down busy roads, and
Yeah.
there was not much I could do, but thankfully I didn't see them get squished or anything. So I think
Yeah.
hopefully they're okay. But yeah, I think it's just spring fever.
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah.
And I think our training does open us up to different circumstances where we have to help, you know?
I think so too, Jack. I think what happens is, I actually talked to some other people who were like, no, I wouldn't, why, don't mess around with it. Like, don't even get involved, right? Just keep going. And I don't think I can do that. Like, it's yeah, I think that's the opening up, right? Like, I feel like I have to do something if I can, if I can.
Nice work.
Yeah.
I recently had an experience where I was waiting for a bus, and I saw this worm kind of like moving towards the path of the bus. And I was like, I should go move the worm.
Yeah.
And then I didn't. And I felt really bad about it. You know, I was like thinking about the worm like every so often throughout the day.
Yeah.
And then got dropped off at the same spot and just kind of like checked out. Like, did I see any traces of worms? And it looked like maybe they were okay. Who knows? Maybe a bird came down and swooped it up. But yeah, I think about that often. There was actually this a couple weeks where walking in like very urban, like densely urban streets of Seattle, like not even lots of trees around in this area, there were tons of little worms like on the sidewalk for like a couple weeks. And so like because I had this like guilt about the other worm and the bus, I kept trying to move like these like little worms and get them off the sidewalk. And man, it was just like, you know, every couple steps you could move a worm, right? So I was
Oh
like,
yeah.
I can't spend my whole walk moving worms. I got to get down to
Well,
the
not
ferry,
only that, but there is sort of this question about
you
interfering,
know? Right.
right, with whatever it is that they're up to. Like even today, I was like, I knew that the whole thing with the turtle, I'm like, I know I'm not supposed you're supposed to just help them along, right? Like they're going in a particular direction for a reason, but I couldn't bring myself to do it. And so, like are we helping? Are we harming? Sometimes it's not that clear, right? I think that sometimes there is this definitely a call to some type of action in the case of, snails and worms and stuff on the sidewalks. Maybe it's just best just to do your best to avoid smooshing them.
No, I think you're right, and that's a really good question that we should be thinking about all the time, right? When we're engaging in helpful activity, is like what actually is helpful?
Yeah.
And part so much of that is like taking our self-centered self out of the picture if we can, or doing our
That's
best
right.
to do that. Because
Exactly.
like
And
so
to
much
it,
of it
right.
is saviorism,
That's right.
right?
Exactly. Like avoid, like, so that's a question that I was asking myself recently with all these dogs and stuff. I was like, oh, am I somehow creating an identity of like Daniel is an animal rescuer? And, like, no, I'm not. Universe, I'm not here to rescue animals or anything. Like, I'll try to help if I can,
Yeah,
but
totally. And it
yeah.
sounds like, yeah, especially with the, you know, was it hamsters or guinea, yeah, guinea pigs.
Guinea pigs.
Like being in the middle of the road, like that's a very obvious, like, okay, yeah, you got to get them out of the road, right? If you can.
Yeah.
So yeah, nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so what about you? How's life and how's practice?
Life is good. Life is dynamic.
No kidding.
There's always something new, right? But no, things are going well. I took the 8 Mahayana precepts yesterday morning,
Yeah.
and because it was the new moon, it was also the solar eclipse, and so it felt like a somewhat auspicious time to take the 8 Mahayana precepts. And those precepts are so they're the five, and I might be wrong about this, but they're the five lay people precepts, right? And then there's a few more. And one of them is like not sitting or sleeping on like a high bed with pride. Another is like not wearing kind of like ornamented things, like not perfumes or like jewelry or makeup and stuff like that. And the other one is not eating at inappropriate times. And so you're kind of taking like monastic vows for a day. Oh, and no sexual contact. For and all of those are for 24 hours. And it's so interesting. Every time I do this, I'm like, wow, how much just attachment just forms my day. You know,
Yeah.
like it's almost like my whole day is attachment based. And of course the one that always like is so very evident is the food one.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had my oatmeal in the morning, and then after that I didn't eat for 24 hours. And this time, I would say the last few times I've done the precepts, I've been pretty like good at being like, this is for the benefit of all beings, you know, like reminding myself of that, like when I feel hunger, like, you know, take on the hunger of all others, and really use this as like a way to train my mind. Whereas I felt something about yesterday, I was just a little bit like weird.
Oh, yeah.
I was having a weird day, and time was totally warped. You can have like beverages, just as long as it's not like milk or like juice with pulp. And so I was like pounding tea like all day. I got a Gatorade and was just like, yeah, you know, like chugging Gatorade. And it was like I was doing harm reduction all day, which is like, you know, this approach to substance use that it's like, okay, we understand that you've got a problem, but let's do it a little bit safer. So, you know, yesterday I was like, okay, I'm not gonna eat, but I am gonna engage in some attachment because I really feel like it's a weird day.
That's
So,
hilarious. I love
yeah,
it. I
it was
love
kind
it.
of fun. It
Yeah.
was kind of fun to
Yeah.
watch.
Because
But
during
yeah.
that whole, during the entire practice, what you do get to really watch your mind.
Big time. Yeah, you really do. And it's all there, you know, like it just all comes flooding in. Like, and last night I slept on the floor. I have like a
I was going
sleep.
to ask you, yeah, you did you sleep on the floor?
Yeah, I slept
Yeah.
on the floor. I've got a pad. I actually, it's, you know, it's sleeping on the floor, but it's not like I'm on hardwood or
No,
something.
no.
And
You're not trying to harm yourself.
yes, thank you. Yeah, no, that's good. We're not practicing asceticism. That's
Not at
right.
all.
But yeah, my cat does not like when I do things differently. He gets really mad at that. So he likes me in the place where I'm supposed to be. So he was like walking around me all night. He was like
Oh, yeah.
downstairs screaming, like, oh my gosh. So I did not sleep well at all. And so when it
Oh.
came time for me to get up for my meditation, I got up and then I just like sat at my altar, like not do like I just didn't even do any like I did some prayers, but they were like half-assed prayers, and I was like, I can't meditate right now. There's like I know that there's no mind, but there's like not even a relative mind here right now. So like so I ended up not meditating this morning, but did it later.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was kind of it was just kind of fun. Like I feel like there are these little experiments that we can do sometimes, and a little bit of
Yeah.
like a challenge. Like you're doing like a maybe it's like a 5K or something where you're like, all right, I'm gearing up for it.
Yeah, totally, totally. I think it's great. You know, the times that I've done it, I have thoroughly enjoyed it. I enjoy it for all the reasons that you pointed out, right? Like, it's just sort of like a good reminder that the way that we structure our lives around comfort and satisfaction, even if it's temporary, like how pervasive that is. right?
Oh,
How
that is
it
good.
fills the day, right? Like, oh, taking, like we've talked about this before, preparing, thinking about food, preparing to get, make the food or get the food, eating it and then cleaning up after it
Yeah.
and doing that multiple times per day, you
It's
know, and
hours.
then hours, and then like resting in bed, like you know, like if you're sleeping on the floor, that's the part that I think is funny about it, is if you're sleeping on the floor, you only get down there when you're ready to go to sleep. There's no like, I'm just gonna lay on the floor and like surf the internet or read a book. No, you're on the floor only because you're going to sleep. And when you, when whatever, like if you have an alarm or whatever in the morning to wake you up, there isn't any desire to just, oh, let me just lounge and just lay here on the floor a little bit longer. No, get your ass up. It's time to go because the floor is only for sleeping on.
Yep, you're done.
Over.
That's super funny.
You know, I'm glad that you mentioned the solar eclipse. Can I tell you a funny little thing about the solar eclipse?
Please,
So, all
yeah.
right. So, I subscribe to a Reddit community of around Vajrayana practice, and somebody had shared the prayer of Samantabhadra, which I really love. I think it's great, right? And so, but they'd shared it like in a PDF, and I was actually driving over to the temple to help out with something, and I thought, oh, you know what? What I'm gonna do? I have this app that reads text, you know, and you could choose anyone. There's all of these voices that you can choose to read the text, and so I picked Snoop Dogg to read the prayer of Samantabhadra,
Hell
which was,
yeah.
yeah, we, oh, it was great. It was great. And nothing quite like it, right? Like I, there, you know, like I was thoroughly enjoying it. And then, and this is during the solar eclipse, right? And what was really cool was, so, and this is the reason, no doubt, that the person shared the post is, so as you, towards the end, it says something to the effect of like, and if you recite this prayer during a solar eclipse, then you are guaranteed to achieve Buddhahood within 3 lifetimes or something like that. And I was like,
What?
woo!
Oh my gosh, that's incredible.
So I guess Snoop
Oh man.
Dogg is gonna be, I don't
The
know.
AI Snoop Dogg is going to be enlightened in 3 years. I'm
We
not
have talked about this
sure.
potential, right? Yeah.
Oh wow, cool. And maybe yourself too, just by listening. Maybe it'll be like five
Maybe.
lifetimes or ten.
Yeah, or more, maybe 500, who knows? But it's all right. It's okay. It'll take some time, I know. I'm getting
Yeah.
used to this idea that it may take a little while.
I know, right? Yeah, that one's tough. Well, that's really cool. And we can do it again in 20 years. We'll
Okay.
recite
Yeah.
Samantabhadra at the next eclipse.
That sounds good. That sounds good. Yeah.
Well, should we check out some Lojong? Let's do some mind training. Let's do slow work.
Let's do
The
what?
slow work of Lojong, right? Lojong
Okay.
slogans. Because I
Okay.
think, it sounds like the Samantabhadra prayer during an eclipse is like pretty, like, they're going pretty fast if you're going to be liberated in 3 lifetimes. But I
Yeah.
think Lojong is kind of like, this is where you really get into the nitty gritty of like, we're on the path and it's
Okay.
gradual
Yeah.
change, but it's working. So,
I'm game. Let me share my
yeah.
screen and
Sweet.
then let us use the random Lojong slogan generator that Dirk created that is housed at lionsroardharmacenter.org, the only English language random Lojong slogan generator in the world that we know of.
It's so exciting every time.
Every time.
Whoa. Hey, this really fits
Oh,
into what we're talking about, right?
this one's good. All
No.
right. All right. Let's
Okay.
do it.
So, slogan 28, give up all hope for results. Fantastic. So we're going to read a little chapter from Tralag Kyabgum, not chapter, paragraph. This slogan may sound foreign to Western ears. Yes, it does. But it has a long history in Buddhist thinking. The Lojong teachings say that whenever we become obsessed with results, we spend our time trying to manipulate the outcome of our endeavor instead of paying attention to the activity itself. Even though we have no real idea what the result will be, we project a picture-perfect vision of our expectations into the future. He's drilling in. I feel like called out right now. This distracts us from doing the task at hand and usually ends in frustration and disappointment because the imagined result is never the same as the eventual outcome. Thus, we shouldn't concern ourselves with what benefits we're achieving from our mind training, but should simply focus on our practice with sincerity. For how we engage in the practice is what will determine the end result. It's important to have a general notion of what we want to attain, but we shouldn't get too caught up in specifics or we'll waste our time and energy in fantasies.
Ooh, boy, that's a good one.
Woo! I just got burned.
Yeah, Jack, really, you think so? You feel that way?
Yeah, no, I'm totally like I'm very much a results-oriented
Yeah.
human being. And I've had to train to understand like that about the whole like it's the journey, not the destination, like type thing. Like I get annoyed by that, right? But yeah, so I've had to train to learn that. And I think it's going to be a lifelong journey, if you will,
Yeah.
of learning this one. But I heard a fantastic quote the other day that I know, lamas also talked about this idea, but one of the nuns from Shravasti Abbey was saying how Thupten Chodron often reminds them like be satisfied with creating the causes, right? Be satisfied with just doing all this preparatory activity, not the results, right? Like
Yeah.
this
Yeah.
life is so precious in that we have the opportunity to practice and to train and to develop our minds. And we might not see what those results are going to be. We're going
Right.
to see little things along the way, certainly. But yeah, I really like that. Be satisfied with just creating the causes.
That's beautiful. I like that. That's exactly it. Because we can't imagine. I mean, we can try to imagine what the results might be, but if past performance is any indicator of future results, it ain't gonna look like anything I imagine, right? Like everything that has transpired, both in a worldly sense and in, in the Dharma, nothing ever actually turns out the way that I imagine it. And it's easy to get distracted by thinking about like, oh, it's going to be like this, it's going to be like that, and why isn't it here yet? Why don't I have it? Like, why don't I see results? Why don't I see the thing that I imagined? Why does it feel different, right? And that's not beginner's mind. That's not open to what is. It's actually sort of the opposite of what we're doing here, right? Like, it's not a, yeah, it reminds me of a couple of different things. It reminds me of the notion of spiritual materialism, right? That there is this attainment when the Heart Sutra, for example, tells us there is no attainment nor no non-attainment, right? Like that's not what the it's not what it's not maybe it's what it's about, but it's not what our daily action is about, right? Like it's really putting in the training, right? Putting in the time and effort, and having some discipline in all of it, and trusting that the results will come. We don't have to force it with our minds. We don't have to think about it too much in advance. Like he says, right? It's important to have a general notion of what we want to attain, right? We don't get a recipe for, bread or something and follow the recipe without thinking like, oh yeah, I'd like to have some bread of that type, right? Like that'd be nonsense. Of course we have some notion, but then while we're baking the bread, we're not thinking like, well, why isn't the salt in the bread, why isn't this flour? Why doesn't it look like loaf yet,
Right. Why doesn't it just come together
Yeah,
on its
what exactly, right? That's just nonsense. It doesn't make any sense, right?
That is such a great analogy to use in talking about this Lojong slogan, because I think so often we have like magical thinking, right? Where it's kind of like, well, I'm kind of a good person. Things are gonna work out okay. Like I'm just gonna let things come to me, right?
Yeah.
But we forget that like actually what we're doing is okay, we've got some in good ingredients, but we gotta put them together. Like
Yeah,
we
right.
gotta put that effort in for it to come out the way that we want it to. And so Yes, we have this precious life where we have, a teacher, we have the teachings, we have so much access, we have translated teachings, all these things. But are we putting it into practice? Are we really making effort? So I like that a lot. I remember that bread making
This is
analogy.
yeah, this I love this one. This is, I gotta say, I think that this is one of my favorite Lejeune slogans. It
And
really
also,
resonates with me. I think part of it too is that it allows, when you're not so focused on the end point, it really does allow you to have some curiosity, some playfulness, and some lightness around the process itself, right? Like, because you're not trying to get, it's not like instant, I'm gonna get that thing right now. You can kind of, like, you can ex the, it allows for some experimentation, right? Like, and it allows for some failure too, right? Like, at least for me, I've been really grateful for this notion that it's a gradual path, it's going to take some time, right? It's not going to happen instantly. When I initially got started on my sort of spiritual window shopping, I was looking for instant enlightenment of some sort, big breakthrough sort of thing. And I know many people, that's true for them. But it turned out to be such a helpful thing for me to recognize, like, nah, man, it could actually be many lifetimes, and that's okay, right? Like, but keep working at it, keep plugging away, you might get there. Like, you no not might, you will get there. Just
We'll
keep
get there.
applying yourself.
It puts things into perspective a little bit. And I think there's also there's this thing that really like drew me to this practice of Buddhism, and like a very much like lineage practice of Buddhism that I found attractive, was like, it sounds like they're saying like, give up all hope, like give up hope. Like it's a little bit, I don't know, provocative in a way that I find like really attractive, where, I just feel like, when I first started, learning about Dharma, it was kind of like, oh, there's like these really happy, like chill and like vibed out people, like Thich Nhat Hanh and Dalai Lama and stuff. And I would have never thought that they would say something like, give up all hope, like give up all hope for results. Because that sound like, if you're not really thinking about it, it kind of sounds like a little bit nihilistic, but it's actually the opposite, right? Because as we know, this desire to create something solid, which I think is what hope sometimes is like this attachment to results, or this kind of creating solidity, is the flip side of nihilism, right? It's like, and so this type of language is something that really attracts me in a way to the Dharma, to lineage Dharma.
Absolutely. I agree with everything that you said. I think that what's being said, no one is saying that there won't be results, or that the results won't be good. I mean, why would anybody pursue any path that they thought wasn't going to achieve good results? That's hence it's good. We know that this is going to lead us in the right direction, but along the way, we have to give up all these expectations. We have to let go of our preconceived notions of what any of this means, right? And our own cherished sort of ideas are, that's the hope, right?
For
Because
sure.
the hope itself is an illusion. Let's not go too far with it, but who is it that's doing the hoping, and what are they hoping for, right? Usually, typically, it's hoping for something for oneself. And the mind training really is about bending that pattern the other direction.
Absolutely. And I think so much of what he said here was about that, like, let's not be obsessed, right? Because obsession is only about is about the self. Fantastic. I love it. Thanks, Lojan. Thanks, Dirk, as
Oh, I love it. That's so
always.
good. So good.
Well, my friend, we're talking about entering the path and refuge tonight. Lion's Roar is going to have some new Sangha members coming up on Sunday, some new refuge students, which is so exciting. So yeah, we wanted to talk a little bit about our journeys.
It's like attending a childbirth or something.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it is. It really is. It's like a whole new dedication and commitment to life in a different, you're choosing to live life differently. So yeah, I think that's a good way to put it.
When did you take refuge, Jack?
I took refuge in February of 2019. So I just had my, oh no, my end of March 2019. So I had my 5 year last month or just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Wow.
I know. I was thinking I need to text all of my refuge siblings and say happy fifth birthday or something.
Yeah. Well,
It doesn't feel that
happy
way.
belated birthday to
Happy
you.
belated birthday. Yeah. And when was yours?
December 10th, I think. 10th, I think. Either 10th or 11th, but I think December 10th, 2022.
Yeah.
I did the official, so I don't think entering the pass ceremony was available when you took before you took refuge, was it?
No, it wasn't. No.
No, I'm pretty sure I was at the first one of those, and that was in March of 2022, I believe. And so, yeah, and it was really helpful. So I was
Yeah,
so
what
I'm
was, tell me about that. What was that like to do that before taking refuge?
I was so, you know, like I'd been, you know, I'd been sort of going around the Dharma Center. I'd been associated with it, you know, like sort of at arm's length, right? And was getting more and more interested, and had been having meetings at Darshan with Lama, was meditating regularly. And I was like, yeah, I really want to take refuge, but I'm not quite ready. I know I'm not ready for it. And I remember talking to Lama about it once, and then lo and behold, there was this entering the path ceremony, and I was invited to join that. And it was like, hey, it totally spoke to me. I'm a commitment phobe. I have a hard time with commitment. And until I am committed, in which case I'm totally committed. Once I'm,
You're
you know
in,
what,
yeah.
I'm in. But because of that, it takes a lot for, you know, like I'm sort of weary. I'm like, I'd rather not, because I know that if I'm in, I'm really, really in.
That's
And so,
fair. That is fair, honestly. I think that
yeah.
might even be a better approach than like jumping
Yeah,
in.
maybe so. But I was really apprehensive about actually committing. And so this was really, it was right up my alley. And I remember during the ceremony, it was really nice. It was like, what, you're not taking refuge, you're not becoming a Buddhist, you're not anything. You're really just sort of stating your intention to live with like a good heart, right? You know, like, yeah, and allow your curiosity to sort of to develop here, right? Like, that's all. It's just sort of an intention of like pointing yourself in the right direction. That's,
Yeah.
and I was like, I'm down with that. I could do that. Like, no problem. No one's gonna get mad at me if I bail out on this, right? It's okay. And so then, you know, and it really did pave the way for me to take refuge later. And I still had, oh my God, I had all kinds of doubt and trepidation around taking refuge, but Lama held my hand
Yeah.
and helped me understand it better. Can I, you know, the thing that helped me the most, I want to give a shout out and a plug to Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche. He wrote,
The
yeah, the essay.
essay.
So Matthew Cruz shared with me before I decided to take refuge. He shared this link to an essay called "The Decision to Become a Buddhist." Is that what it is? And I read it, and it hit me like a bolt of lightning. Then I read it again. I read it again. I must have, I don't know how many times I've read that thing. Maybe dozen times or more, you know. And I the more that I read it, the more that it resonated. And I was like, yeah, yes, this is clear. Like, this, I understand what this is saying, you know, what taking refuge is about. And I want that. That's exactly what I'm aiming for. It's a little scary, yeah, sure, but no, I think I want this, you know. So that essay, if anybody, you know, to anybody who is listening, if you are interested in what it means to take refuge or are thinking about it, or if you have taken refuge and you haven't read the essay, basically anybody who hasn't read it, read it. It's
Yeah.
amazing. Really good.
Yeah, and I think that's it really sets the stage, right, for just how much of a commitment it is. That it's, you don't want to jump in lightly. It's something that when taken seriously will completely transform your entire life. And so we should be taking those things really seriously. And I wonder too if that's also why Lion's Roar now has the entering the path pathway, right? Is that we want people to be involved and engaged, but not have to make that kind of a commitment yet. Because the essay really points to just how important it is. And that, if you are if you are feeling that, drive, that spirit of refuge, that's beautiful. And but just take it seriously and really, really meditate on it. So yeah, that essay also really struck me. And I was kind of like, okay, I'm game. Like that's how it felt.
That's funny. It must be a rite of passage at Lion's Roar.
Yeah,
Like
totally.
everyone's sort of like somebody knows somebody and they're like, "Hey, they need to read this essay."
It's funny. I think I Google searched because I was like, I want to know a little bit more
No
about
kidding.
refuge. And
I
but you
wonder
would,
if maybe you're the one who pointed it out to Matthew and he shared it with me.
I don't know. I don't. I think maybe Matthew also had the same impulse as I did. But one thing that I found really helpful too, in the same vein, was that I had asked to speak to a couple of Sangha members about what their experience of taking refuge had been.
Smart, smart.
Yeah, I was like, I want to kind of get the lowdown. I want to hear some of the grit, right? Like
Yeah, what did you discover?
I'll
I
jump
didn't know
in.
that you did this. Come on now.
Yeah, well, I asked a Sangha member about this, and she laid it out for me, like kind of what had happened for her and her experience. And it was so helpful because she was just really real about it. And she was like, this is really hard. Like this is the hardest thing that I've done because it just requires me to look at my life and like what is getting in the way of being this person that I want to be. And so that was, again, it was like this kind of light bulb going off of like, I feel ready to really work on myself. And not just in a therapeutic way, because I think that's important to think about too, is like, are we going to the Dharma? Are we going to the temple solely for therapeutic reasons, which is not an incorrect reason, right? Like that's why I showed up to the temple, is that I wanted some refuge from the chaos and stress in my mind and in my life. And so started going to the meditation groups. But Dharma is separate from psychotherapy. It's separate from this kind of Western ego-centered really approach to life. And so I had to assess that a little bit. Like, am I just trying to like feel okay within my one life that I'm kind of experiencing here? Or am I ready to kind of to move spread out beyond that,
Rinpoche says all the time, this is not a self-improvement project.
This is nothing. Thank Buddha. I was gonna say thank fucking God, but I super appreciate that reminder because sometimes if I'm not aware of that, I will get into that mindset, the results-oriented mindset.
Exactly, right. Again, it's not that the self won't improve.
Exactly. That's the thing. That's, yeah, that little magnet
And
right there.
like, you know, like we've talked about before, you know, I think spiritual materialism or wanting to feel better, that is the impulse for the majority of people who show up, right? So it's not, I don't want to in any way denigrate that. That's actually an expression of your Buddha nature. You care for yourself and you want to, you know, not suffer anymore. It's just, I think, like what you're saying, Jack, is it's bigger than that.
We're thinking lifetimes, we're thinking all beings, you know.
Exactly that. Exactly that. So what were, you know, so I'm glad that you mentioned that. I think that's really good advice, you know, to talk to other people who have taken refuge and get a sense of what it meant to them. I'm curious, what was it that kind of clued you into the fact that you're like, yeah, I know I'm ready. Like, okay, I heard what you said, right? You were ready to kind of make a big substantial or have a big transformation, right? Something to that effect. But what were like the markers? What, you know, had you tried other things before? You know, were what led you there?
I so part of my journey has been that I'm someone who's I'm a little bit impulsive at times. So I can I'm spontaneous. Not so much anymore. Now I'm a little bit more like I like things pretty structured. But I think I met the Dharma, my spontaneity met the Dharma at a really important time, where I kind of just knew. Like when I looked on the Lion's Roar website, I was like, this is the place that I want to be. And started going to the meditation, started going to teachings and just really diving in. And so not everyone's going to have that kind of approach. In
No,
fact,
I can No.
and I actually really encourage people not to do that. Like I encourage people, like, go slow, you know. And at the same time, like, I think sometimes you just know. Like I showed up, I met Lama, I started meeting with Lama regularly. I'm disciplined, right? Like that's one of the good karma things that I have, is that I was like, I want to do this like program. Like thinking of it kind of like as a program. And at the time as a self-improvement project, right? And so like that just felt like the program that I wanted to do. It was just right for me. And I think I was just starting to realize how kind of unsatisfactory all the other options were. So like, you
Yes.
know, like
Right.
thinking about like, okay, yeah, I know I want to get a good job. That's cool. Yeah, I like drugs and it's kind of boring, you know, then they're done. Relationships are cool, but meh, they're whatever. And so it was like all these kind of avenues that I had been like, those were the things, right? Like those were the things that I felt like would give me like what I was looking for, which is like my ideal version of myself. And all of them just kind of felt a little blah. And I have like good re I have a good relationship, I have a good job, you know, like I've got these kind of worldly things, but they're not giving me the kind of satisfaction that I really have, I think, always yearned for. And it's why I did drugs, right? Is that I was like yearning for this really deep experience of the spiritual essence that I've always kind of wanted to tap into. And so I think I tired of all the other options. And then when I showed up at the temple with some spontaneity and some discipline, it was like, this is the place. This is where I'm going to do it. And so it's only deepened from there. And in fact, like, you know, I think of those days as like Oh, I mean, I'm still a baby Buddhist, but that was where I was like a little tiny, tiny baby Buddhist.
You're an embryo.
I was an embryo, and I'm just so grateful for that little, like, still pretty wild being, you know, who like I'm both being tamed and also like totally like energized by this path. It's incredible.
That's, Jack, I just want to thank you. That's beautiful. That gratitude that you have for that self, that being, who that little embryonic baby Buddha, right? Who was struggling and who didn't who had a chaotic mind and didn't know what was going on or where to figure things how to figure things out, and how somehow all of that led you to this, right?
Right.
That's really, I love that. That's heartwarming. I'm going to reflect on that in my next meditation about
Yeah.
how much I appreciate that person, that being that had the same effect for me, right?
Yeah.
So it because it's interesting because so often our stories are like diametrically opposed, right? So
Yeah.
like in this case, for example, undisciplined, right? I do not have the karmic fortune of being a disciplined person, right? But the thing that is identical, I mean literally the same, was this. We explored samsara. We explored as many options as we could, right? So, in addition to all the things that you said, I also would say I tried to find it through philosophy, right? Different philosophical traditions. And that was nice. That was helpful, expanded my mind and made me look at things from different perspectives, but it never cured the problem, right? Hedonism, all the pleasures, pursuing all the sense pleasures possible. Psychedelics. I know you mentioned drugs, but I'm just saying, like, I really thought even after I was at Lion's Roar, I was like, oh, if I
I
just
know.
go a little bit harder or a little bit further or whatever, I'm going to break through and all of a sudden, I'm gonna see the light and it's good. Oh, it's gonna happen. If I,
Yeah.
and it was very clear, right, that that was not gonna happen. But I was like, I haven't found anything else that was even close, right?
Yeah,
And
right,
then
yeah.
and even though I was at Lion's Roar, I was meditating regularly there. I was doing I mean, you want to talk about taming a horse or a wild creature, right? There I was, like in the corral or whatever, like hanging out, and I was like bolting, right? Going in all these other, I was like studying all these weird ass esoteric new age traditions and going down these various, Hindu or Sikh paths, right? All while, Buddhism was right there. Like I was literally going every single week, right? Like sitting
Yeah.
there. And I was not like reading the website. None of that did it for me. I was just like, these people, no, not this. It's somewhere else, right? And it wasn't until like I really like God, I plumbed those depths as much as I could and was like, it's not gonna happen. This is not it, right? And then it's interesting. I saw this thing on Reddit. I'm gonna give you a quote from some random Redditor. I don't know who they are.
Nice.
But it speaks to what you and I are talking about. They said in answer to the question, somebody was asking about taking refuge, and this happened earlier this week, and they said, refuge is just a natural consequence of understanding that there is no refuge to be found in samsara anywhere. This means your only option is to take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, right? And even, I think it really felt that way to me as well, where, in the article that we were talking about by Chögyam Trungpa, he says, like, the problem is, in fact, it's not that the problem isn't, that this or this, it's not, we're not saying that a particular Buddhist tradition is the only one and the right one, right? But that this sort of spiritual shopping, right? This experience of like trying to find it by all these different means and not committing to a well-proven tradition or path is the problem, right? How can we possibly make any progress down any of them if we don't commit? And yet, just like you and I are talking about, we never found a good reason to commit, right? We, you know, like there wasn't, we never, nothing did it for us. Then all of a sudden, lo and behold, somehow or other, we're like, ah, this is a thing that we can commit to. And I think the thing that did it for me, I don't, it took me a little longer. I have a thick head. But I think that what struck me was that I could not find any untruth.
Right.
So everywhere else, there's a lot of bullshit.
Yeah.
And a lot of things that sort of don't add up or don't make sense or somehow just like
Yeah.
I could smell that it or could figure that it wasn't actually true. And I
Yeah.
never, not once, and to this day, I maintain I have not discovered even a single phrase of untruth in Buddhism.
Isn't that beautiful?
Right?
That's beautiful.
It's
Yeah,
amazing.
it's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think you're right there. I feel that we have pretty good bullshit meters, right? Like that's a really good thing to have, because you're right, there's so much BS in the world. And so many kind of grifters and just like people trying to make money off of our suffering, and
Yeah.
like how grateful I am that, like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, I didn't get caught up in a cult or something,
Or
like
did you? No.
I know, right? We already talked about that one time. We
We
talked about
did. We did.
how Buddhism is not a
We're
cult.
just cross-referencing
That's right.
another one of our t podcast talks.
That was a good one.
Hey, I have a question.
Yeah.
I have a question for you related. So you've been doing this. You took refuge 5 years ago. And I'm curious. So, your initial idea of what it meant to take refuge was probably something along the lines of the Buddha, Shakyamuni as an example, Dharma, the teachings as the path, and Sangha as community or companionship with like-minded folks. Is that a fair assessment?
Fair assessment. And I think also the guru, that I had to make a decision to have a teacher, flesh and
Yeah.
blood teacher. Yeah.
Interestingly enough, Rinpoche himself, when talking about it, he I remember so there is this, we do in fact take refuge in our teacher as well, right? But he when it comes to the triple gem, he mentioned not too long ago, he's like, the guru is part of the Buddha gem, right? So it's not something separate. It's
Got you. Yeah.
from at least that was my take on it, right? Don't want to put
Yeah.
words in his mouth. But I'm curious about so yeah, we do want to take refuge in the teacher, right? And so then also in the teachings and then in the community. But I'm just curious, how has that evolved for you? I imagine that you probably take refuge on a daily basis, right?
Yeah.
And I'm obviously given that there's a familiarity and a depth that proceeds from that. And I'm curious if you could speak about that for a little bit.
Sure, yeah. Well, I think when I first took refuge, there was kind of this like gross level understanding of like, okay, I'm making this commitment, and I have to say, while I jumped in, I still had quite a bit of resistance. You know, like I knew that this was my path. I knew that this was where I needed to be, but I was still like, these people are weird, and like these
They
practices
are. We are weird.
weird. And I'm just gonna like be here and do it and like think
Yeah.
that
Yeah.
it's
Yeah.
weird. So
I
like, right. So just to clarify, but yeah, there's this kind of like way that it worked at first on a very like gross level of on my behaviors. So like taking the precepts, making a decision that I'm going to avoid certain things. I'm going to start a daily meditation practice, right? So these very kind of like concrete ways that taking refuge changed my actual behaviors. And then like there's this kind of like I'm thinking about the last couple years where there was this little bit of a shift in how like my refuge takes place, because I'm like no longer doing the things like I'm not killing insects intentionally. Actually, I did intentionally kill one insect because they were like flailing and dying, and I don't know if that was the right thing to do, but I did it. So I did that one time. But anyways, I'm not using substances. But there's these kind of like subtle ways that refuge is kind of like breaking down, like breaking me down. It's how it's almost like water, right? Like and oftentimes that's used as a metaphor in describing the mind and the different stages of meditation. So there's at the beginner level, it's like this rushing, stream going through like some rocks. It's just like tumbling. It's wild. And then the second stage is kind of like this. It's this moving river. It's this large river. So it's a little bit more, quiet and still, but it's still moving. And then the final stage is like it's the river meeting the ocean, right? There's like this meeting of the mind with mind. And I have not, in meditation at least, I haven't moved past like the raging kind of like wild waterfall. But there is this kind of like subtle way that the Dharma is moving in through all of my afflictions. It's these ways that, like, for example, like I'm very, this is just a very easy example. I no longer feel craving for things like TV. Whereas like a few years ago, I'd be like, honestly, we'd be having this conversation and I'd be thinking like, I get a reward for doing a Dharma thing. So I'm gonna go watch TV after this, But I don't even feel like that anymore. It just doesn't, like that doesn't come up. And so that's something that unless we like think about it, like look back and reflect, we're not gonna really notice it that much because there's still some gross level ways that I get angry, I get frustrated, I'm not always super, very kind to people. But it's these subtle things that if we start to look, and I look back, 5 years ago taking refuge, wow, like it is different. And so refuge in some ways is that it's like I'm taking refuge in my own change process too, like which is the Dharma like working on me. So that really feels like I think how my refuge has changed a little bit.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. What have you noticed? I know we've only got a little bit of time, but I'm curious, how what things you've seen change with your refuge.
I think, two things that come to mind. One of them is similar to what you're saying. There is this sort of feeling of like I that the taking refuge, I began to recognize like what I am taking refuge in, right? So on the one hand, I'm saying on a regular basis, I take refuge in the guru, the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, right? And then my activities, my behavior, my body, speech, and mind, I demonstrate actually that no, I'm taking refuge in other things, right? And then there, so like I couldn't help but there's this what I'm saying, there's what I'm doing, and they used to be more far apart. But now there's a lot more harmony between the two, so that there's no there's I don't feel as much of like I'm like no I recognize I really am taking refuge, and so like there's that aspect of it, which is still it's still a work in progress, as you mentioned, right? But there's not as much dissonance between the two, right? I get it. I'm like I am taking refuge, right? And I like it. I'm not upset about it. And then the other aspect to it is this great appreciation for not just the Lion's Roar Dharma Center Sangha, but for the great community of beings throughout time who have made all of this possible, right? Like that sometimes when it, like I used to discount that, right? I was like, yeah, whatever. But now I'm like, like it's
I know.
breathtaking.
It is. It is breathtaking. It's huge. And I mean, that's one reason why I think our lineage really emphasizes lineage, which, I think if you're coming in as someone who's like outside and just seeing all of it, it could feel kind of like culty and weird and like, why are we like, and but yeah, it's that we have so we owe everything, to our lineage.
I Jack, I'm getting a little teary-eyed just thinking about it. Yeah, like I'm just like, whoa, wow, that's heavy, right?
We have a responsibility. We are
Yeah.
that lineage, right? Like
We
we
are
are
not,
the
yeah.
one
That's
to keep
right.
it
That's right.
going. Big
We're
deal.
not, the Sangha is not a separate from us. We are it.
We are it. Yep.
Right.
So when we're taking refuge in Sangha, that's part of it.
That's right.
Ooh, Daniel,
So
this has
good.
been so wonderful. Thank you to all who are listening. And for those of you who are taking refuge or entering the path on Sunday, we love you and we're so excited that you're here. And can't wait to be on this journey with you. Thank you so
So good. Thank you, Jack. Bye, everybody.
much. Bye.